Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Peace, everyone, and welcome to the Edible Activist Podcast. I'm your host, Melissa L. Jones, broadcasting live from the lobby of The Line, D.C. This podcast is where dynamic people of color in the food and agriculture space share their personal food journeys, passions, and perspectives that stem from the land, all exemplifying the spirit of activism in their own edible way. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the Edible Activist Podcast here at Full Service Radio at The Line, D.C., broadcasting live. This is actually a very special show because I typically have one person in the studio, and now I have several people in the studio. I'm an audience, so let's welcome you guys. Are you guys excited to be here?
Yes.
Great. Don't leave me hanging. You excited to be here, Dom?
Yeah, I'm super excited.
We're about to do this. Okay, so this is our very first time having a live audience as we do this interview, this podcast interview. So I'm really excited, something that we're experimenting with. And I also just wanted to create an opportunity to engage listeners and just other people who are in the space or may not be connected, you know, to the podcast to come and listen to these conversations. Like, they're just really dope. So I'm excited. I'm excited for the energy. I'm excited that for this first time experience. So thank you guys for coming. The other really great thing about this special live broadcast is that we have a sponsor. Fair Farms actually is a supporter of this special live broadcast for today. And it's brought to you by Fair Farms Maryland, which brings together consumers, farmers, public health professionals, and conservationists to advocate for a food system that is equitable, fair to farmers, invests in homegrown healthy foods, and restores our waterways. So to learn more about how to get involved, please visit fairfarms.org. So shout out to Fair Farms Maryland. Thank you guys for supporting this special show. And we're going to go ahead and get started. So a few months ago, I actually had Dom Hozak, who is the farm director at The Ark, join me in the studio to talk about his journey. And we had some really interesting conversations, and I definitely wanted to bring him back in the studio. And I'm so happy that you said yes, that you would come back.
Yeah, I'm happy that you invited me back. I thought I was rambling the last time. So
you were not. I listened to it like five times, but I was a little rusty. That was like back in my heyday. Okay, I'm like, this is episode 33, so I'm still trying to learn. But I was just like, ooh, I could have done better here and there, but it's all good. But you're back now, and we're going to have a dynamic conversation about around land liberation. That's what we're going to talk about. So for those who don't know Dom, I know some of you guys do and some of you guys don't. I'm going to read you his bio, but he's a host of many things. And he just came from the farm, too. So you don't smell like the farm.
But I'm
you
glad.
Just came from
the farm. Yeah, I definitely did.
So Dominic Hozak is the ARC farm director and a cooperative member of Earthbound Building. He hails from Angola, Indiana, where no farming took place. Like, he did no farming growing up in Indiana, y'all, which is hilarious to me. He also went to underground in his hometown, then received his master's from Morehouse at the School of Medicine, then later found himself here in the district where he would commute to the University of Maryland, where he enrolled in a doctoral program. And we'll talk a lot more about that. And he actually took up community and behavioral health. Now, Dom resides on a 3.5-acre homestead in Southern Maryland, where he is continuing to build a safe and sustainable infrastructure for his family. Can I come visit?
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome anytime.
Because we talked about that the last time. Because I said that when stuff goes down, I know where to go.
Yeah, yeah. And now we've got like a fence up and a hoop house up and a lot more infrastructure. So you definitely should come now.
We're going to tour. Later, we're going to be there. Okay.
Yeah.
We're down. All right. So we talked a lot about survival and really being resilient and really building systems, especially as Black people, to protect our land and to just having the skill sets and the know-how to grow our own food, to build our systems, to build infrastructure. And we got really deep.
Yeah.
Really, really, really deep. So as I was thinking about this specific episode, you know, I definitely wanted to tie conversations around survival, and then we thought of land liberation. So I'm actually going to go back to an experience that I had that I was part of when I was in Philadelphia, and I participated in a march with Trina Baxter and all those wonderful folks up in Philly.
Soil Generation.
And Soil Generation, yes. And we marched down City Hall, and I remember Trina screaming, "Free the land."
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. For those who know Trina, free the land.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember her saying to me, "Free the land is for everybody, sis."
Yeah.
For every single person. So before we dive into the crux of our conversations, what does land liberation mean to you?
So for me, I think that land liberation means a few things. I think on the most kind of like theoretical, philosophical aspect, land liberation is sort of an anti-capitalist framework where we're viewing the land not just as some commodity like the idea of real estate, but actually the land and the earth as this system that we're a part of, and that we need to love and we need to nurture, and that we need to respect. And so land liberation sort of on the highest level kind of looks like a departure from the system that we're in now where everything's cut up and divided and you have your little plot and I have my little plot, into this like kind of framework where, again, we're seeing the earth and ourselves as an ecosystem. I just recently learned that the word eco literally means home, like its literal definition means home. And so, you know, when I think of land liberation, you know, the idea of ecosystem is really, really linked to that and us sort of working in this reciprocal relationship with the land. And also means, like, in a very political way and a radical way, like us taking back resources that were stolen from us and stolen from Black and brown people historically and still currently. And so land liberation looks like some of the things that Soil Generation is doing up in Philly, where they're literally trying to address some of these urban farms and gardens that have been threatened and taking direct action against the threat that's being that the system is putting on these folks in these urban farms. And again, like looking at some of these rural spaces or just land in America, for example, which is majority private property. And, you know, the idea of land liberation is, to me, is like breaking up that private property, that real estate kind of concept, and giving the land back to its original owners and inhabitants, the people that are actually working the land and whose families have a history of working the land. You know, like when I look around this room, it's Black and brown people. And all of us at some point in our lineage have folks that were working the land. And so when I think of land liberation, I think of that sort of return to our kind of ancestral, our ancestral ways, where again, earth is respected. The land is a concept that's shared and communal, and everyone has access to those resources. So land liberation, you know, it means a lot of things to me, but I think that would be sort of my summary.
So when you enrolled into your doctoral program at the University of Maryland, it didn't take you a long time to say, you know what? I don't need this no more.
No, no.
You said we don't need any more theories around how to build a just food system.
Yeah.
And you were like, bye.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of things like all at once, thoughts that I was having. You know, I was really disillusioned with academia and again, just like the idea of keeping information and knowledge for just a certain select group of people. You know, I'm enrolled in the University of Maryland, so I have access to their like digital library of resources and research that is part of like the public commons. I mean, it's not like any one of these researchers came up with the foundations of their research. This is knowledge that has been passed down through history, and it's part of sort of the human story. And so that idea was really problematic for me. I was also in a space where I was like one of the few Black people, and so there's this token feeling that I had when I was a kid growing up that I just like absolutely hate and was trying to get away from. And then, yeah, I just was really at a place in my life and still am where, like, I just wanted to work with my hands. And I was fucking tired of sitting in an office. No offense to anybody that works office jobs. But I was just tired of sitting in an office. And again, like, just theorizing about, oh, black people need to eat better food and we need more groceries. It's like, no, we need more local producers and we need a system that encourages folks to be able to grow their own food. And so I just, you know, kind of came to this hard stop where I was like, look, I can just do all of these things that I'm talking about, like actually do them. And, you know, at the time I didn't have a child. And so I could take that kind of leap of faith and not have to worry about my financial situation, which was a blessing at the time.
You said at the time. Yeah. I mean, it's not, things have changed.
Well, I'm just saying it's a privilege too. I've been reflecting on things to just like, say fuck my career, that, you know, just to change what I'm doing. And like at the time when I left there and started working at the ARC, I was just volunteering and they were like paying me a very small little stipend. And so like I'm recognizing some of the privileges that I had to even be able to do that. But yeah, I was just really, really tired of school. I was really, really tired of theorizing about things that I was seeing and that were really like emotionally impacting me. You know, so much of like academic research is like folks going into communities and asking these like really hard questions to people. Like I remember going in a community in College Park and the professor was asking us to do surveys on the street with people, and the surveys were like, how much food, like how much have your children eaten this week, like how many servings of this have you had this week, you know, what like heart disease problems do you or your family dealing with? And it's like, that's so intrusive. And we also have no solutions for them at that time. We're just like kind of taking their stories and their data so that we can publish and advance our own career. It just felt really, it felt like there was exploitation really rooted in the heart of my PhD program. I still think so for a lot of PhD programs.
And you did on the last show that we did together, you mentioned that you had issues with the fact that you feel that black people are forced to just get degrees, 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 degrees.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I have since had some really tough conversations with folks, because I have a lot of friends.
And no offense to those who are in doctoral programs getting their master's. Peace be with you.
Right.
Like, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. But I thought that was very interesting that you said that.
Yeah. And again, I wasn't trying to say it to be condescending, but I do perceive that black Americans, well, and I think black people like Nigerians and stuff do the same thing when they come over. But there's this like, we have this thought that like we have to keep getting more degrees to like validate our brilliance somehow, you know, and like validate why we should be able to talk in spaces or have expertise in things that we grew up in, that we have lived experiences in that other folks don't, you know, but we are the ones, it seems like, who more often than not are having to prove ourselves with all of these degrees. And then you kind of add that, you know, sort of, you know, I don't even know, like imposter syndrome, I think that a lot of black people are forced to feel in this country, young, especially our generation, you know, where people like have literally 3-4 degrees, $200,000 worth of debt, you know, just to be able to get that like entry level job to start themselves off. You know, I think that that's just insane. Yeah, that's sort of where I was at then. I mean, I still think the same thing now. I've since talked to people who are academics and researchers who are black who have varying feelings about it, and I think that everybody does have a place and a space in the movement, but I definitely think that there is an overemphasis on degrees right now, even bachelor's degrees, just going to college period. I think there's an overemphasis on what that's going to do for your career and for your like your livelihood. That is just kind of a falsehood, and I think that there's data out there that supports that also.
I don't need to see the data.
Yeah.
I do. So you left your doctoral program. We talked a bit about this the last time we had our show. And you started farming full time at the ARC.
Yeah.
And some of those aren't familiar with the ARC. Some do. Some are familiar. But if you can just let folks with the ARC, let folks know what the ARC is and what you do there currently as the farm director.
Yeah. So
because he was farm coordinator. Don't mean
farm manager.
Manager. Yeah, now he's farm director.
Yeah. Yeah. So the ARC, you know, it's a big community space in Southeast. And it comprises a whole bunch of stuff. There's a theater there. There's a workforce center there. DC Central Kitchen just moved in and started up a teaching kitchen space and cafe down there. The 11th Street Bridge Park, which is, some of you might be familiar with that project, but they're building a bridge literally from Navy Yard into Anacostia, is there. And the Ark Farm is also there on site. And so when I dropped out of the program, I'd been volunteering with the Ark for a little while. And the opportunity just came at the right time. I dropped out and like a month later, the person who was the farm manager before me moved on. And so I was able to like step into that position. And I've been there since the end of 2015.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You mentioned watching your father build, because he was an engineer, right?
Yeah, is an engineer still.
He is an engineer. Yeah. And you didn't farm at all in Indiana, and your family didn't farm at all in Indiana.
No.
And looking back now, did you ever think in a million years that you would be in this space? And just making those that connection, just watching him build, and now you're a builder,
yeah,
in so many different ways.
Yeah, no, I never did. You know, I think when I was in high school and when I first went to college, I wanted to be a high school English teacher. I wanted to be a high school English teacher, and that's why I went to college for. You know, no, I never thought at the time that I would be getting into farming or building, but I think a lot of those seeds were planted in my subconscious. Like, my dad also had a little, like, kitchen garden growing up, so he would grow, like, just a table, like, no bigger than this, like, 3x3, you know, where he would grow just, like, one tomato plant, one basil plant, and so... You know, I saw stuff like that. And then again, he built a lot of this like small little add-ons that we had to our house, like a little gazebo. And like there was an addition that was built when I was like in middle school that I watched him like do the framing of. And so I wasn't interested at the time. I think a lot of kids just like aren't trying to do what their parents are doing. But yeah, I think those seeds were definitely planted in my head. And so as I got older and became more analytical about the world and about myself, it seemed like that seemed like a really easy step for me to make, mm-hmm, you know? And I thank him a lot for planting those seeds and for me being able to see stuff like that. So.
Wonderful. So, this is Melissa L. Jones here on the Edible Activist Podcast, broadcasting live on Full Service Radio at The Line, D.C. And I am chatting here with Dom Hozak, Farm Director at The Ark and Cooperative Member of Earthbound Building. And this is a special broadcast today, guys, because I have an audience who is like staring at me, and I hope I'm doing okay. But we're here, and I'm just excited to have you. And I've had you on the show before a few months back, and we talked a little bit about your upbringing, growing up in Angola, Indiana, which I've never heard of Angola before, but yeah. Now I do.
People always thought, like, when I went to college and I was like, oh, I'm from Angola, they're like, oh, you're African. And I was like, no. Oh, yes, but no, I'm from Angola, Indiana.
And we're focusing a lot of our conversations on land liberation. Dom is a builder in so many various capacities. You know, he is, you know, in addition to a farmer, he's really about building sustainable structures that are, you know, what help him in our communities be resilient and just really preparing for a lot of the craziness that's going on in the world, and just the know-how and the skill sets to grow your own food, you know, to build your own infrastructures, even from furniture to everything, like you guys do it all. And we're going to talk a bit more about the co-op that you're part of. But I definitely want to go back when I had you define land liberation and what that means to you. And as I stated, when I was in Philadelphia and I had participated in this march, and we were literally like marching down City Hall with plethora of residents of Philadelphia. And really what that march was about is the same thing that's happening here in DC and Detroit, even in Mississippi, where, you know, big businesses are coming in and they're swallowing up the land and they're building condominiums and everything, and they're taking away these green spaces where people can grow food and where they can build community. People who've had homes and areas, like, these plots are being taken. And so you know, going back to that, like, is this land really our land? And how can we regain control over what really is ours?
Yeah, I mean, I fundamentally believe that this land is everyone's land. You know, we're all here on Earth together. And so, again, like it's a really capitalist Western idea of like real estate and private property and the dividing and conquering of land. And so I think that, you know, for it starts with like folks just decolonizing their thoughts about land, mm-hmm. about private property, like how they are even seeing that. And then it moves into like a lot of different spaces of like direct political action, which I think is necessary for folks to hold accountable the people that are dividing us and conquering us and telling you like, no, you can't have farm or keep gardening on this lot that's been vacant for the past 50 years. Right. And you're the one that beautified it. And now suddenly, because some hotel developer from Texas bought some land here in DC, like we're going to change that. And so I think that that's, you know, the political direct action part is one of it. And then again, you know, I'm a huge, huge proponent of like land liberation starts again with our actions towards the land. And so people just, you know, not everybody has to become like get into hardcore farming. I mean, there's folks in here who'll tell you farming is not easy. it's not a lot of things that I think right now there's a mystique around and like a. It's like there's a wave and it's cool now, but like it's really fucking hard. And it's, you know, and it's sometimes it's really not rewarding, you know. Overall, it is.
A lot of the times it isn't rewarding.
Yeah, but like it's really frustrating and it's so out of your hands. I mean, last year was so rainy. Like we had a hell of a year. Gail, I'm sure you know, there's folks in here that can relate to that too. Sorry to shout you out. You know, so there's that, I think, but yeah, just folks like having that reconnection with the land, you know, seeing it again is not just like a plot of dirt, but this like kind of living skin that we inhabit and that we're a part of. And if we don't treat the land well and the soil dies and the microbes die, like we're not going to have any food. And we're not going to have any life on Earth. And so the land, again, it is like the basis for all life. And so just demystifying and decolonizing your minds around like what the hell we're doing here, you know, mm-hmm. what this earth really, really is. And a lot of our ancestors, whether African, whether Native American, Asian, you know, like white, like there was a real connection to the land. And it Absolutely. Wasn't until this Western capitalist patriarchal, you know, concepts of divide and conquer and destroy and plunder came about that we were like physically and spiritually separated from the land. So land liberation is just like that kind of reclamation of what we've always been doing. So
I need to get a fan so I can just like, you preaching, right? This is why I brought him back. This is why I brought him back. Earthbound building.
Earthbound.
Let's talk about it.
We shout that out during builds. Like, if you ever come on a build with us, you'll hear niggas, earthbound.
Listen, however you want to rep your set, go ahead for it, okay?
Always,
seriously.
Always.
So tell us about Earthbound Building, because what I just learned, because I had messed this up before, that it's a cooperative.
It is, yeah. So Earthbound is a worker-owned cooperative. It was born actually out of the Black Dirt Farm Collective. And if any of you know Black Dirt, then you know, but for those who don't, Black Dirt Farm is the Black Dirt Farm Collective is a network of farmers and educators and activists and formerly incarcerated folks and mamas and queer folks who have all come together to organize around food justice and land liberation. The idea that we need to reclaim our food system and all the sort of concepts of food sovereignty. And then again, also like a real tangible reclamation of the land and mm-hmm. of land-based practices and agrarian living. And having farming and urban agriculture and all that things in cities too. Well, clearly urban. And so, yeah, there was the collective. And within that, there was a lot of talks amongst folks about how, you know, there can be sort of like farmers and small farming. And again, to demystify all the farm, you know, kind of hype that's around right now, you really need infrastructure also to have right. a successful small scale farm. And small scale farmers, you know, desperately need to have the structures and the systems in place on their farms to actually make some money. You know, you can get a plot of land and grow the most beautiful kale and collards in the world, but if you don't have cold storage or a wash station, like you're just going to have tons of food spoilage. And so, or a high tunnel to be able to extend your season, because like it gets cold as shit here. And, we, you know, for to have that sort of long term sustainable farming, you need to be able to extend your season. And so, you know, out of those concepts, Earthbound Building came up as like there needs to be a tangible sort of arm of the movement that's actually building structures for people and providing jobs for our folks.
Wow.
So Blaine was the original kind of founder of Earthbound Building, and started doing some of those buildings and things in about 2014.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just helping out with farmers, and it was just kind of all conceptual then. And then in about 2016, we all kind of came together and decided, like, this needs to, we have an opportunity here, not just, again, to support the small farm movement, but to provide jobs that are safe jobs with safe working conditions and a living wage for people, and have a consensus base where we're breaking away from this old capitalist model of boss and worker to this new sort of cooperative model that we need to replicate in all of our systems on Earth. Where people are sharing resources, being transparent with each other, you know, and cooperating with each other. And so now fast forwarding to 2019, we have four people who are worker owners of the cooperative and a whole network of builders and folks that we collaborate with. And, you know, we're really, really focused on improving the infrastructure for farmers and also providing like sustainable alternatives for folks who are trying to, like, as people are getting gentrified out of the city and things like that, you know, Earthbound wants to be able to provide, like, build affordable housing for people and put up the sort of structures and infrastructure that they need to start their own small farms and homesteads. And again, always supporting farms and farmers in the network and building things and doing solidarity work with the folks that we really love. So.
And they are always building all the time. Yeah. You guys need to follow Earth. It's Earthbound Building, right?
Yeah.
And it's so funny because when I tried to get Dom on the show, like the first few times, it was like, oh, I'm building a hoop house right now. Like, I can't make it.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually boots to the ground.
Yeah.
To the ground.
Yeah. And building really, I mean, I really enjoy working the land, but I found like especially carpentry is really my true calling. And so, yeah, it's just like a joy. I never feel like I'm working when I'm with Earthbound. And again, because of the type and the way that we've set up the business structure and that it's so transparent and cooperative, you know, it doesn't feel like I have this boss who's weighing down on me and or this like staff underneath me that I'm trying to like pick up. And, you know, everybody, because we all have a stake in this business, you know, has that mentality of like we need to hustle and make sure that things happen. We're always saying like get shit done is like our motto with Earthbound.
Right.
And so we're always trying to get shit done. Yeah,
I know that's right.
Yeah.
So when I first, I did actually a show a couple weeks ago where I actually had my mom on the show, who's here, and I had to put her on the spot because I get a lot of questions about how I got into this food space, and a lot of people think that I'm like a farmer or something, and I'm like, no, it's far from it. And it really started off with the fact that my mother was dealing with some health challenges, and then she actually introduced us to a documentary, and from there, it just opened up my mind even more for me to research about how food and health was connected. One of the many books that I read, because I was actually really into soil, did not know how key soil was to our climate, our food production, and just even thinking about our own internal ecosystems and like how to feed our gut, like just it's connected in so many different ways. So for those who look up soil, like soil is dynamic, okay, because we have some farmers in here, we have some non-farmers in here, like it's really important for our entire system. So one of the books that I read on top of like How the Soil Will Save Us and a ton of other soil books is I read Foodopoly, which is by Winona Hunter. And it wasn't to that point where I realized how much of a monopoly our food system was and how it's just tied up in big business and how big agribusiness plays a huge part in all of that. And I felt duped.
Yeah, I think we've all been duped.
I felt so duped. I was like, what the hell?
I think that was the point.
And a lot of people don't know that, you know? And when we also think about like land liberation, like food liberation, which obviously is connected, but I felt absolutely duped.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, it doesn't even take like for you to read a book or even like be an activist to like go into Whole Foods and be like, the food is way too fucking expensive right. here. You know, like
I think a whole lot paycheck, of
people, huh? Yeah, or like have that like intuitive thought that something's not right. And then you talk about like sicknesses and cancers and all these like kind of heart disease and things that are so rampant in our culture, and any culture that starts to adopt a Western diet, mm-hmm. you know, it also like all those pieces start to come together as to like how our food system is so fundamentally broken right now, and why there's such a desperate need for us to rechange that food system, just like so many of the other systems.
So many other systems.
Yeah.
Dom, you said crazy times are ahead of us.
Yeah.
And you said you were preparing for the worst.
Yeah.
What else is about to go down?
I mean,
because you are preparing for a lot of things. And I love Dom's perspectives because he also has a lot of theories. And a lot of these theories I resonate with, okay? Yeah. We talked about this during the first podcast. But you did say that. You said, I am preparing for the worst. We had a government shutdown, which was like the longest in history. You know, we had folks standing in line waiting for fresh hot meals, like, you know, scraping for resources. What are you preparing for?
I think, you know, again, just on the most broad level, like environmental degradation, you know, like habitat loss, in as we like continue on this path of just like destroy, burn, dig, dump, you know, as things get more expensive and people get continually like pinched and pinched and pinched out. And that is going to naturally facilitate like more anger and uprising in people, like natural anger and uprising. I'm not even mad at the people, but you know, I also want to prepare myself, especially since having a daughter now. Mm-hmm. You know, my partner and I talk all the time about how we can protect her, my partner also has a 6-year-old daughter, so how we can protect her daughter. Like, you know, this it just seems like anytime I would turn on the news, you know, here or like national news or global news, it seems like every single day more and more events are conspiring towards this like kind of breaking point in human history, which we probably have had again, or we probably have had before, but where like there is, you know, massive disruptions in social life, in family life, in ecological life. And so I really just want to prepare myself for those things, you know, and growing food is definitely one piece of that, like learning how to swing a hammer, which, again, I think that's another thing we need to demystify. Like any of you in this room can build shit. It's really it just a little bit of math. And
I don't
like
know how to swing a hammer.
Yeah, just
I
like
can swing it. But I mean, this is the right
you'd
direction.
Be so surprised,
know?
Though, like what if you really put your mind to it, like you see these pictures on Earthbound, but like you shouldn't be that impressed. I mean, we work really hard. I'm not trying
Dom,
to
Dom, you are the Black MacGyver. Can I just say that? Like, for real.
I'm not. You haven't
I
met
said, didn't
yet.
I say this the last time, Lita? When stuff goes down, I know where to go. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I have friends in this space. I do want to learn how to like light a fire though.
It's super easy.
And like, I don't mean like a typical fire. I mean, I can light, you know, a piece of paper.
No, but like
I'm talking
survival
like,
stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I think that it's important for everybody to just have a basic understanding of those things. And it's not like you have to be a nut about it. And like, but I really do think that just we've gotten so far away from like the basic skills of just living. You know, we're so dependent on all of our devices as they're all out on the table and everything. You know, I think that I'm not trying to be a Luddite. I think that technology is fine, but I also think that it's important to remember those skills and have that just in your tool case for if things do go down or if not. I mean, building stuff and doing that sort of stuff is just fun also.
Absolutely.
You know?
Well,
and
I guess
so,
I don't do it, but I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like
and
I
so
do
like,
it.
Like River is going to know how to build. I said this before, but like that is a really important
River
thing.
River is his daughter.
River is my daughter. and iShot and my partner, everybody's going to know how to swing a hammer, how to put stuff together, you know? And again, it doesn't have to be like as intensive as the stuff that Earthbound is doing for money, but just the basics are so, so fundamental. And so I'm a huge, huge proponent of that. And also, and this is going to be a little controversial, but I'm definitely a proponent of the Second Amendment for people of color. I think that we, in this tiny little moment that we have rights to bear arms,
right.
I think that it is important for folks to at least know how to operate a firearm.
I agree.
I'm not like advocating for everybody to buy guns. I don't think that everybody should have a gun. I think that there needs to be like rules and regulations and background checks. And so I'm not trying to like, hit you with some Tea Party bullshit right now, but I own a firearm, and I advocate for people too. And we've, as in Earthbound, have been talking more and more about like just doing, going out and like just doing target practice together, and like, and going out and like wrestling each other a little bit. I know that sounds a little funny, but just like, just getting back to some of those like kind of core skills of survival that we've lost, just so that we can stay ready. You know, just so that we can stay ready.
Who's ready to take a field trip to Dom's homestead? And you, as I mentioned before, you live on a 3.5-acre homestead in Southern Maryland.
Yeah.
And why was it important for you to get land? Well, for the obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And I know you mentioned that when you had your daughter River, that it was important for you to acquire land and live off the land. But just speak more to that and that process.
Yeah. I mean, so when I found out I was going to be a dad, that was really the first thing that popped into my mind, is like, I don't want to live in DC anymore. I'm from a small town, you know, and then also like just through Earthbound and through like joining the farming community and being in all these beautiful spaces, I was really inspired in 2017. A big group of us folks in here too went down to North Carolina to Earthseed, which is a land-based cooperative that, if you haven't heard of, you should really look them up. They're a group of black and brown folks who acquired a hundred acres, 66 acres of land, and are building housing on it, and are giving folks opportunities to like get their own plots and build housing on it. And just seeing that lifestyle that they were creating was like just super inspiring for me. And I don't necessarily want to move down to North Carolina, but I was like, how can I replicate that in my community and live more intentionally here in Maryland, here in the DMV with my folks? And so we were like, okay, let's just like find some land and make it happen. And, you know, got really lucky through a few channels and found this beautiful farm down in Brandywine. And now the ironic thing is like, you know, those ideas of like intentional community are manifesting, because Blaine actually just moved down. He's like my next door neighbor. He lives like a half mile away from
Blaine
me.
Blaine lives somewhere Blaine, now.
Yeah, Blaine wow. has a house now.
Tell him I said what up. And I'm looking for him to come in the studio.
Yeah.
Gail's cracking up laughing, but you know why.
So he, you know, and then
didn't mean to put him on the spot.
The
like
other
that.
Gail, the other farmer, Gail Livingston, who you should definitely connect with, who is a super vicious farmer. She was for a long time farming in West Virginia. Black
yes,
woman.
I know about her. I haven't met her though.
Vicious farmer, and she actually just moved down to Brandywine with her mom.
Oh, nice.
And we had like, so Blaine sort of planned to move down there because I was down there, and we had kind of coordinated that. But Gail came down on a whole nother, like, we didn't even know that she was down there until we were all at a farm conference.
Oh, she just
and
showed
she was
up.
Like, yeah. And
she strolled up.
And so it feels like it feels like something spiritually, energetically was like drawing some folks there. And again, like my whole goal and is to like build intentional like eco villages for our folks, you know, like that. If I could say villages. What I would really like to do one day, it would be to like live in a really intentional community where like all the babies are playing together and people are helping co-parent their kids. And I'm not saying we have to be like hippies and share every single thing, like get out of my house sometimes, but you know, living more intentionally in like an intentional community is 100% something that I'm looking to do. So
that's what's up.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Again, when can I come visit?
Anytime.
Anytime. Like,
yeah, literally anytime. Just let me know.
Okay, we're going to wrap up in a few moments, but I do have a couple more questions. I want to thank my awesome audience. I got to shout you guys out. Y'all are wonderful. Thank you for being here with me. Again, this is Melissa L. Jones here on the Edible Activist Podcast, broadcasting live here in Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel, D.C. And I have a special guest, Don Hozak, who actually joined me again for this special live broadcast. And we've been talking about land liberation, and Dom is just a phenomenal person. You see why I brought him back.
Thank you.
I love your perspectives.
Thank you.
Just really great conversations. And what does a typical day look like for you out on the farm?
So now, I mean, at the ARC, now that I'm the farm director, I said all that shit about office stuff, but I'm like, I'm doing a lot more grant writing and stuff now, actually. But, you know, typically, like, we have the CSA. And so, you know, I'm, like, outside just, like, harvesting a lot of the time, like, trying to train up the farm manager who's stepped up, JJ, who you should also have on the show. JJ is from Southeast, was born like on Stanton Road, just up the street from the Arc.
Okay.
Got into this space after having some kind of troubles in his youth and was just like really looking for a job. And at the ice cream truck, they were just like, the Arc was hiring for some folks to just help out working the grounds down there. And he got into it through that. Now, 6 years later, he's the farm manager and a really, really skilled grower. And he's beekeeping now. He just got his beekeeping certificate.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So like Jay is a beekeeper now and like producing honey in Southeast.
And my mother's going to be like, where the honey at? Yeah, I swear. Honey. This I woman texts honey. Me after every show. I need strawberry plants. I need this. Girl.
Yeah, so no, the farming at the Arc is JJ. I'm not even gonna like front and act like I'm doing a whole bunch down there. I'm trying to like vision and stuff, but it, you know, my real passion now and a lot of my time and energy is Earthbound, and then also like getting my farm in Brandywine off the ground. And that farm consists of just like a lot of hard labor. You know, it's just myself and my partner working the land. Mm-hmm. And we have no large scale tools. We use a small little BCS tractor, walk behind tractor. You know, we plant everything by hand. We start all of our own seedlings. And so it's super, super labor intensive, but it's extremely rewarding. And so, yeah, it's like just a lot of my farming life and my real farming life down in Brandywine is like just a lot of hands, head, heart in the dirt.
I'm coming.
Please do. We need like so much help. Any of you all.
Oh, you need help. Coming to visit. Okay. Dom, thank you so much
for
being here. Yeah. This was awesome. I have one final question for you, but before I do that, so we've had some awesome beverages provided tonight for our live audience by the Culture Kombucha, voted 2019 Best of DC, hosted by Washington City Paper. Culture's mission, woo, right? Exactly. Give it up for Milan. That's a big deal. Culture's mission is to attract minorities and lesser targeted communities to internal health and wellness through crafting a thoughtful, inclusive, and culturally relevant health beverage brand. Okay? Find out more at theculturekombucha.com. Wasn't it great? What did I have? I had, let me see, really quickly. Trap It Like It's Hot. All right, y'all better get that. And the other one was Lotus Flower Bomb. Okay, I like that. And then our dessert for this evening was, our delectable desserts, I'll say, was provided by Out the Bubble Bakery based in Springfield. Another sister doing the daggone thing, okay? Always dairy-free, always nut-free. Their motto is to provide beautiful desserts that everyone can enjoy for a worry-free celebration. Weren't they great? So good. So thank you guys again, the Culture Kombucha and Out the Bubble Bakery, for providing snacks for this evening. Awesome. So Dom.
Yes.
So we typically wrap this up with a rapid fire, but I'm not going to do that because we did it the first time and y'all just have to catch the first episode to hear his rapid fire questions. So my final question for you is, if you could recreate a grocery store, what would that look like?
I mean, it would just be like local seasonal produce from small scale farmers of all colors, black, brown, white. Like, really, again, my love of the land and is tied to everyone. It really isn't racially based. I mean, there's race based things that are a part of land liberation, of course, because race is built into everything, capitalism, everything. But it would be like a grocery store that was a cooperative, for one, that was owned and operated and ran by the workers that started that space. It was built by Earthbound Building, the actual physical space.
Hey, now.
But yeah, it was just, it had all entirely like locally produced, locally grown veggies, locally grown fruits that are all seasonal. So this grocery store wouldn't be like a space where, unfortunately, you'd be able to get pineapples.
Right.
Be able to, you know, it'd be like here, this isn't the climate for that.
Right.
So it'd be local. It would be seasonal, and it would have also products, Culture Kombucha, X's pepper sauce. It would have like value-added products that were made by folks in the area.
Let's do it.
Yeah, keeping the money in the family.
Yes. Well, you know, shout out to Detroit, D-Town Farms and the co-op that they're building. And actually, I just saw Baba Malik a few days ago, saw the space where they're building the co-op, and I cannot wait. I know it's a lot of work, but that's dope.
Yeah. Yeah,
we can make it happen.
Yeah.
We can make it happen. Thank you again.
Yeah,
this has been awesome.
Yes.
Like, he literally flew in last night from California. You must love me.
I do. I definitely do.
All right. Peace, everyone. And thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We are here live on Full Service Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m., where you can catch today's episode on fullserviceradio.org, as well as iTunes and Spotify. Be sure to follow me at Food Talks in Color on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Are you an edible activist? Sure you are. Come join me on the show. I would love to feature you. Just shoot me a DM on the gram. Peace and blessings all. And remember, there is no culture without agriculture.